Okay, welcome everybody again today. Sorry about yesterday. I mean, we're not the only people. There were many in the UK, I heard. So, yeah, so today we're going to start with actual texts. Yeah, so before we start with the prayers, try to generate correct motivation, especially walking over Zoom. It causes the mind to get a bit distracted. You know, so just try to make sure the mind goes where it has to go. So try to think that we're here together and for a particular purpose, and that is not only to change our minds to achieve more stable forms of happiness or sustainable forms of happiness in this life. That's kind of a universal kind of motivation. But those who are Buddhists, again, think about, as we explained the day before yesterday, the three motivations of the Lam Rim. Yeah, so by depending upon the understanding and practicing and meditating on the 12 links, you will be able to achieve precious human rebirth. Yeah, that's a possibility, or even more than that, eliminate the suffering of samsara by the reverse order of the 12 links, and even meditate on compassion by seeing the suffering of all mortal sentient beings equal to the amount of space. And think for that purpose you're here, in order to eliminate all suffering of all beings. So try to set a motivation for yourself. And then we do the prayers in a little bit more abbreviated way. So we have some things to cover. So if you open the prayer book on page number 5, I thought it was, right? Yeah. So we do the praise to Sakyamuni Buddha, the first section, the first paragraph, 3 times, and then we do the short prayer to the heart, in part of the Heart Sutra. Yeah, so page 5. Guru, teacher, Bhagavan, Tathagata, Arhat, perfect, completed Buddha. Perfect in knowledge and good conduct, God and over the world, supreme guide of human beings to be attained, teacher of gods and humans, to you, the Bhagavan, glorious conqueror Sakyamuni, I prostrate, make offerings, go for refuge. Guru, teacher, Bhagavan, Tathagata, Arhat, perfect, complete Buddha, perfect in knowledge and good conduct, God and over the world, supreme guide of human beings to be attained, teacher of gods and humans, to you, the Buddha, the Bhagavan, the glorious conqueror.
Use your mic.
Sorry? My mic is a problem.
Again.
Is it better now or not? No?
It's not you, Geshe-la. Some people don't have a mute mic, so you can hear them doing the prayer in the background.
Allez. I continue?
Yes, sorry.
Yeah. I think I did 2 times, right? Yeah, 3rd time. Guru, teacher, Bhagavan, Tathagata, Arhat, perfect, complete Buddha. Perfect in knowledge and good conduct, Sagata, know the world, supreme guide of human beings to be subdued, teacher of gods and humans, to you, the Buddha Bhagavan, glorious conqueror Sakyamuni, I prostrate, make offerings, go for refuge. Then we skip and go to page number 8. It's a short praise instead of the Heart Sutra. Page 8. Last verse, the inexpressible, inconceivable, inexpressible perfection of wisdom, unproduced, unceasing, the nature of space, object of the unique knowing, transcendent wisdom, to the mother of the victorious ones, of the 3 times, I prostrate. Tayata, gata gata, para gata, para sam gata, bodhisoha. Tayata, gata gata, para gata, para sam gata, bodhisoha. Tayata, gata gata, para gata, para sam gata, bodhisoha. Then we go to the foundation of all good qualities. This is in this version, page 16. The foundation of all good qualities is the kind and perfect Guru. Correctly devoting to him is the root of the path. By clear and seeing this and applying great effort, please bless me to lie upon with great respect. Understanding that the precious freedom of this rebirth is found only once, is difficult to find again and is greatly meaningful. Please bless me to generate that mind that uneasily takes its essence. This life is impermanent as a water bubble. Remember how quickly it decays and death comes. After death, just like shadow follows the body, the result of black and white karma follow. Finding firm and definite conviction in this, please bless me always to be careful, to abandon even the slightest negativities and accomplish all virtuous deeds. Seeking samsaric pleasures is the door to all suffering. They are uncertain, cannot be relied upon. Recognize these shortcomings. Please bless me to generate a strong wish for the bliss of liberation. Led by this pure thought, mindfulness, alertness, and great caution arise. The root of the teachings is keeping the Prajnamoksha vows. Please bless me to accomplish this essential practice. Just now I've fallen into the sea of samsara, so of all modern migratory beings. Please bless me to see this and train in Supreme Bodhicitta and bear the responsibility of freeing transmigratory beings. Even if I develop only bodhicitta, but I do not practice the three types of morality, I will not achieve enlightenment. With my clear recognition of this, please bless me to practice the bodhisattva vows with great energy. Once I've pacified distraction to wrong objects and correctly analyzed the meaning of reality, please bless me to generate quickly within my mind stream the unified part of karma abiding, especially insight. Having become a pure vessel by training in the general parts, please bless me to enter the holy gateway of the fortunate ones, the supreme Vajra vehicle. At a time, the basis of accomplishing the two attainments is keeping pure vows in Samaya. As I've become firmly convinced of this, please bless me to protect these vows and pledges like my life. Then, having realized the importance of the two stages, the essence of the Vajrayana, by practicing with great energy, never giving up the four sessions, please bless me to realize the teaching of the Holy Guru. Like that, may the gurus who show the noble paths and the spiritual friends who practice this have long lives. Please bless me to practice, pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. In all my lives, never separate from perfect gurus. May I enjoy the magnificent Dharma by completing the qualities of stages and paths. May I quickly attain the state of Vajradhara. Then the short mandala offering.
Janjo Bada Dani Gazuji, Dagi Chisi Kibet Sonangi, Dola Penje Sangye Do Basho.
So, yeah, everybody can hear me though? Hello? Yeah? Okay. Thumbs up.
Yes.
And halfway. Yeah?
It was very difficult during the prayers. There was a lot of noise.
Okay.
It seems but somehow now it's clear.
It's clear. Okay. Okay.
The picture is frozen.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Geshe-la, your picture is frozen.
Yeah, my picture is frozen. I was just sitting still. I was practicing sitting still because if I move, then the mic might go. You see? Yeah,
but sound is better, so that's good.
Yeah, right. I'm not frozen. Okay.
It's
yeah.
Frozen.
If you switch to the gallery view, if everybody switched to the gallery view, then the Geshe-la is moving.
Yeah? Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I was planning to start with a quotation. Yeah, so I just recalled it. Janjo Chodo Ranchin Chen. Samji Kulan Kazasin. See, even I got distracted. Janju Choge Ranjin Chen, Janju Choge Ranjin Chen, Samjin Kulan Nevan, Dema Toba, Kyamba, Goro Kyabanam, Dera Dun Samjito. So that's a quotation from the great Seven Dalai Lama. It's very, very moving kind of quotation. One verse where it says, Jamjo Choki Ranjin Chen means the Supreme Enlightenment possesses the ultimate nature. Yeah. And that's the first line. And the second line, it says that it abides within all transmigrators. And then, not having realized this ultimate nature of reality that also abides at a level of Supreme Enlightenment, beings wander around in samsara. And for that purpose, I generate the body-mind. So that's the kind of things we talked about the day before yesterday, right? That we all have this potential to develop. We have this potential even to get a higher rebirth, yeah, as a human being with all the freedoms and endowments. And we have the potential to achieve even liberation and enlightenment. Yeah? So here this verse is referring to supreme enlightenment, yeah, the ultimate development of the continuity of a sentient being. Yeah? So one can become a Buddha, one can become fully enlightened by developing oneself in the stages of the path to enlightenment. But unfortunately, most modern sentient beings who are like, you know, incredible, infinite in number, they haven't realized this ultimate nature. And because of that, they're just wandering around in samsara like us. You know, so that's why, since beginner's lifetime, we have had this habituation towards, you know, of course, grasping at a self or adherence at the self of a person, self of a phenomena, and that causes us to have ignorance. And by power of this ignorance, as we also saw the other day, we generate destructive emotions, yeah, afflictions. And by the power of that, we engage in activity. Yeah, so we also saw that. Physical or verbal, and it can even go to the extreme of, you know, harming other persons, as we saw, or positive, of course, also like the policeman organizing the birthday cake. Yeah, it's a positive thing, right? So, but still, there's always on the back this grasping at true existence or grasping at self. And because of that, we create positive and negative karma that, yeah, let us go around in samsara again and again. So to focus not only upon oneself, having these kind of difficulties in life or having these kind of causes for samsara, focusing upon all sentient beings being in a similar state. Yeah, as we just read in the Foundation of All Good Qualities, where it says of sentient beings, modern sentient beings, they, you know, turned away in samsara, wander around in samsara, or falling into the sea of samsara, or in the three principal aspects of the path, it also talks about the four currents, right? So the four rivers, yeah, the sufferings of birth, sickness, aging, and death, and all the suffering that comes with it. So focusing upon those difficulties, not only upon yourself, but all sentient beings, then we try to generate what is called the body-mind, right? The mind that wishes to achieve enlightenment for the purpose of liberating all sentient beings. So that's motivation based on what you also discussed, compassion, love and kindness. And taking as an example, people in prison in Tibet, yeah, not only they create causes for enlightenment by thinking in those lines, but also in this life even there are great benefits, because being tortured over a long period of time, there was no post, you know, traumatic stress disorder. Yeah, so love and kindness and compassion, even in this life, brings great benefits. Yeah, so if that's your motivation for today and for the rest of the course and for your life, then of course, then you are in a very, very safe track. Yeah, safe track to enlightenment and safe track for the benefit of all sentient beings. Yeah, so that's His Holiness Dalai Lama often says that if you selfish, try to be selfish in an intelligent way. So that means if you work for the benefit of others, then automatically you achieve more happiness for yourself. Yeah. So that's most of you know the benefits of generating these kind of good qualities of mind, right? Generally speaking, whatever good quality of mind or constructive emotions we generate, that brings peace, that brings more constructive way of thinking, as we saw in the introduction, that these destructive emotions basically cause unneeded suffering. Yeah, so destructive emotion of anger, attachment, jealousy, pride, you know, and we talked about fear, anxiety, and those kind of things, especially in the modern time. That doesn't really bring much benefit. Yeah. So, quoting Shantideva, if you have a problem and you can solve it, you solve it, nothing to worry about. And if you have a problem and you cannot solve it, like now we in this lockdown, then, you know, it's kind of, it was getting better though, but, you know, it's kind of an opportunity to put it into practice, because we cannot change the situation ourselves, so then we have to live with it, right? So then our mental attitude plays an important role, right, to prevent mental suffering. So also it's been said that if you're mentally strong, although physically you're suffering, then it's much easier to deal with that physical difficulty than it's the other way around. If you have mental, you're in depression or you're down, you're in this cycle of thinking about the same thing again and again and again, it's very difficult to get out of it. Yeah, so that's why mentally you have to develop. And that's what the Buddha says. So yeah, I did a quite elaborate introduction on the first day. So I promised we're going to start with the text. Yeah, and the 12 links, yeah, also is rooted in the Shalush Proud Sutra, one of the sutras of the Buddha. Yeah. And the Buddha, very easy way, actually explains with a seed and a sprout how we create causes for samsara, and also how we can prevent being born in samsara. So also this text is set up like that. Yeah, there are the first verses, first 9 verses, so to say, which talks about how we are born within samsara. And then the last few verses actually talks about how to get out of it. Yeah. So understanding how we fall into samsara and how we stop samsara, if you understand that well, then you will also understand the Four Noble Truths. Yeah. So that's why we said the day before yesterday, understanding the 12 links, or seeing the 12 links of interdependence, you see the Dharma, yeah, meaning you see and understand the Four Noble Truths. If you understand the Four Noble Truths, you will see the Dharma, and then you will see the Buddha. Yeah, that means you will see the possibility of achieving liberation and enlightenment. So that means that, as His Holiness Dalai Lama often says, if you contemplate emptiness, for example, which goes against the first link of ignorance, if you understand emptiness well, then by the power of that, you start to generate possibility of seeing that liberation is possible, or you get strong kind of faith based on reasoning, yeah, that liberation is possible. And so there's different types of faith, yeah, clarifying faith, etc. But so this faith is actually the faith of establishing the result. Yeah, so this kind of direct form of faith that's, yeah, based on reasoning to generate this inner understanding. Yeah, so then the Buddha explained that, you know, as a farmer, or as we go in the garden and plant things in our garden. So also here in Jamyang we have a garden. It looks amazing these days. It's been taken care of very well. But, you know, if you plant something like a farmer, like is the planter is kind of like ignorance, right? Yeah. Then the seed that has been planted is basically like karma, yeah, the second link. Then, of course, without heat, moisture, fertilization, it doesn't grow, right? So first the seed is planted into the soil, right? So the soil is like consciousness, yeah? The stream of consciousness, so to say. And then the heat, moisture, fertilization is then referring to, you know, graving and grasping, and a certain extent then it develops and becoming. Yeah. So the farmer is like ignorance, or the person who plants, right? The seed is like karma, and the ground is like consciousness, and heat, moisture, fertilization, etc. is like, you know, that which activates it. Yeah? So also at the time of death, we have craving and grasping that activates previously planted seeds of karma. Right? So in a similar way, the Buddha explained in this way. And then it grows into a plant or a sprout or a tree, and that's referring to birth, right? After becoming. And so we have a person who plants it, and we have the seed of karma. Then we have the consciousness or the ground, yeah? And then by the power of those factors or emotions, actually destructive emotions like craving and grasping, yeah, it generates a potential, and this potential generates into a sprout or a tree, and that is kind of the birth. Yeah, so that's a way to explain it. Yeah, so Nagarjuna, as explained, is a very important person in history from the Buddhist point of view. Yeah, so as His Holiness Dalai Lama often refers to Nagarjuna, yeah, clarifying the teachings of the Buddha. Yeah, so we have 108 volumes of the Buddha's words, right? The teachings, collection of the teachings of the Buddha, so they say. So those teachings were being examined, yeah, in the Nalanda tradition, and one of the great masters a few hundred years after the Buddha, Nagarjuna, he examined those teachings and wrote various commentaries. Yeah? So there's a collection of 6 texts with regard to logic and reasoning. That's why His Holiness Dalai Lama puts that in great esteem, very important. Yeah? And then also Nagarjuna wrote also 1 text after proving everything with logic that is not self-made, it comes from the Buddha. Yeah? So Dokuna Dupa is a kind of text condensing everything from the sutras. That's another text by Nagarjuna where he actually proves there's this collection of 6 texts of reasoning is not his own kind of way of thinking, but is based on the teachings of the Buddha. Yeah, so, yeah, that's the history of the text we're going to do. And then also I said that His Holiness often teaches the fundamental wisdom text of Nagarjuna, and well, chapter 26 and 24 and chapter 18. Yeah, so it refers to 26 are the 12 links, 24 is referring to the Four Noble Truths, and 18 deals with emptiness. Yeah, so today and tomorrow we're going to deal with chapter 26, yeah, the 12 links, and then the last 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday, we're going to a little bit more into depth into emptiness, chapter 18, yeah, because most of you have read and studied the 12 links and maybe listened to the audio recordings as well. So then I thought we do a little bit more about emptiness because it's so extremely important. Yeah. So emptiness is important to eliminate ignorance. If you eliminate ignorance, there is no possibility of karmic action to come about. Right? If there's no karmic action, there's no cause for samsara. Yeah, so you can eliminate your rebirth in samsara and all the way up, motivated bodhicitta to the state of enlightenment. So that's why meditate and practice and study, especially emptiness, extremely important. Yeah, so let's start with the text. Yeah, so I don't know, people have the text in front of them or not? The chapters I give out, right? Yeah, so there's 20. Yeah, there's 1 file where it says, I think the title of the file is Nagarjuna's Fundamental Wisdom, chapter 18 and 26. Yeah, so in that file there is first chapter 18, after that 26. So we start with 26 because that's to understand the 12 links, and then chapter 18 deals with emptiness. Yeah. So yeah, examination of the 12 links of samsaric existence. Yeah, that's what it's been explained. Yeah. So then Nagarjuna, in the first verse it says the obscuring ignorance propels one into samsaric birth. Yeah, so ignorance, if you have a marker with you, you can mark ignorance as 1 and then birth as 11. Yeah, because ignorance is the first link. Yeah, so we just said the farmer is like, or the person who plants a seed, right, is kind of ignorance. Yeah. Then there are 3 compositional factors, yeah, enhance the formation of birds. Yeah, these actions impel one into the state of migrators. So that means that, yeah, based on ignorance, yeah, as we saw on the first day, based on this concrete concept of I am me, yeah, you think, yeah, when we recall the first day, we even did a meditation a little bit on it, that based, yeah, or generating aversion or attachment or jealousy or pride, and even with anxiety and fear, or somebody criticizes you, you get annoyed. It's a very concrete concept, not only a concept, an appearance, so to say, of an I that appears. How dare this person say this to me? I'm not like that, you know? So that's how that I appears, that I have to study a lot. That we call the object of refutation. So in the different schools of Buddhist philosophy, it's been explained in different ways. Yeah. What is this ignorance? Yeah. So that's very important to study. So from the point of view of really knowing emptiness, you have to understand ignorance, right? Because how things appear to our mind in a way that we believe it's true, but actually it's not. Yeah, we saw that also on the first day. I quoted from Aaron Beck, yeah, one of the professors from the University of Pennsylvania, who says that 90% of a person who is angry, yeah, the mental image that has been built up of the person that causes the irritation, yeah, 90% is mentally fabricated. Very interesting. And he also said the image is not the person. So this is for the same thing, you know. The mental image of the person we dislike is not the person. So actually we get angry at the mental image, you know. And then, but we think, that's our confusion, we think that mental image is a person. So there's another proof that these destructive emotions are not in contrary with reality. The same for attachment, you know, we ordered this pizza on our app, you know, today we had lasagna, right? or lasagna, or whatever you order on an app, you know, you see that, you get attached to the food, you build up this mental image, and that food is never the same as a mental image, right? So then you get the food and then it's not according to your expectations. Or your mobile phone, or your laptop, or Zoom, for example. The first day Zoom, I thought, wow, this amazing system. Look at that, the prayers on the screen. I can see everybody. I can do question answers. But then the next day, it was not like that, you know. So then the first day, I thought, wow, amazing, this Zoom. It's good to communicate. But that's, you know, kind of way of, wow, this is amazing. That was broken down very quickly the second day. So, you know, sometimes we get attached to things in life, then we hold on to it, you know, and that's actually a mental image, that's not reality, because the mental image is kind of permanent, right? That seems to be not changing, right? Well, actual reality is not like that. So that's why things with death and impermanence, you know, with the virus, that is something that shakes people up, because we don't expect that to happen, because we don't understand impermanence, you see? So then you can, yeah, see that whatever appears to our mind, yeah, is not always reality. Yeah, as we see with these mental images, yeah, we build up a mental image of a person we dislike, or an object of attachment, yeah, or the things we don't understand, or grasping to permanence. When we see the reality, it's not according to that image, but we believe that image was reality, you see? So that actually causes the problem. So with ignorance, it's even... So these things with anger, attachment, to a certain extent we can see, right? Yeah. And we can analyze, and it's not always present. Yeah, it's kind of sometimes it's dormant, sometimes more manifest. Yeah, we're not always angry. Yeah, so today I think not really, but maybe yesterday a few people got kind of, oh, what's happening? You know, so it's not always manifest, but it's kind of ignorance. Yeah, that's kind of almost omnipresent, you know, since beginner's lifetime. So that's an important thing. That's why it's so difficult to understand. Yeah, because we believe it's reality. Yeah? Same with anger and attachment. We believe at a certain time it's reality, but it's easier to see that anger is not very constructive or attachment is not very constructive, right? So with ignorance, it's a bit more difficult because the habituation is much stronger. Yeah. And it's basically almost more or less present. So that's why people say, oh, emptiness is so difficult. It's so difficult. Understanding ignorance is so difficult. And then they want to just put it aside. Yeah, so don't do that. Yeah. Because, as Aryadeva said in the 400 verses, even if you think about emptiness or selflessness, and you have a mere doubt if it exists or not, yeah, and you think, oh, probably it doesn't exist that concrete way it appears. If you have that doubt, Aryadeva said, that shakes samsara. So that's a very positive thing, you know. So if you don't understand emptiness straight away, then it doesn't matter. As long as you try to understand it and try to question it. Yeah, so doubt is a very important aspect of the spiritual path. Yeah, if you, what I said on the first day, as His Holiness quotes often from the sutra, that the Buddha said, you know, your scholars, venerable ones, don't believe whatever I say out of faith or, you know, respect for me. You should analyze, yeah, like you analyze gold, like, you know, breaking it down, rubbing it, and melting it. Yeah, so there's different ways to those three ways of analyzing from the point of view of the, you know, three levels of reality, yeah, the manifest aspects of reality, slightly hidden, and very hidden aspects of reality. Yeah. So, yeah, so to come back to ignorance, so based on this kind of concrete concept of I am me, yeah, I am mine, sometimes you translate, yeah, based on that, we generate destructive emotions. So based on the concrete concept that you exist from your own side, without dependence, right, we think, how dare this person say this to me? And that is enhanced by building up these mental images, because they're also kind of, you know, a mental image is kind of a permanent thing. So then everything becomes very concrete. So what is this ignorance? So according to different schools of Buddhist philosophy, because there's a few people attending who know a little bit more about Buddhism, maybe more than I do, so I think I have to explain also a little bit some more information. If it's too much for other people, then you just listen and then later on study tenets again or something like that. So according to ignorance, it's been explained for the four schools of Buddhist philosophy in different ways, right? So according to Vaibhasika, for example, one of the schools, says it's kind of not knowing. Yeah, it's not a view, according to their school. It's kind of not knowing, like not knowing about the law of cause and effect. Yeah. If you do something good, something will result in something good. Yeah. If you do something bad, will result in something bad. Yeah. So if you think about, there's no causality, you know, causality of karma doesn't exist. Yeah. So karma is nothing else than cause and effect relationships within the continuum of a person, right? So when we get angry at a person, it disturbs the mind, right? So there's also a form of causality. Yeah? Destructive emotion causes you to suffer. Yeah. So, but there's more subtler aspects of that as well. Yeah. So they, in the Vaibhasika school, they say just not knowing things. Yeah? It's not a view. Yeah. So that's kind of what they say. What is ignorance? It's kind of a deceiving aspect of reality. Yeah, so that's, and then the Sautantrika, they go a step further, they say it's also an aspect of a little bit more than that, yeah, it's an aspect of it is, I would say that in technical term, is discordant with the reality of selflessness of a person. Yeah? So we say the self doesn't exist from its own side, right? So the opposite of that is that the self exists from its own side. Yeah, well, the self exists in a way that is permanent, unitary, you know, and empowered. Yeah, or a self that exists, you know, self-substantial existing aspect. Yeah, so they say, the Sautantrika, they say, it's something that is the opposite of a mind that understands selflessness. That's what they call ignorance. So that's a much more subtle aspect of ignorance than the Vaibhasika, right? Yeah. Then in other schools of Buddhist philosophy, then it talks about even more subtler aspects of selflessness, right? So if you say the self is, if you grasp at a self that is, you know, Dakchik Ramachan, is like permanent, unitary, and autonomous or empowered, right? If you think the self is kind of permanent, is one, right? It appears sometimes like that, you know, the I appears like that. Yeah. So that's a quite a coarse form of ignorance compared to higher schools of Buddhist philosophy. Yeah. So Prasangika, for example, says, go a step further, it is kind of a self that appears to exist in an inherent way. Yeah. So, yeah, I just briefly go into different aspects when we, on Wednesday, talk about emptiness, we go a bit further. But from the point of view of, yeah, ignorance is a kind of, for the time being, you try to understand, there's two aspects of ignorance. Also, if you study Lamrim Chemo, you will see it mentioned, basing on Asanga's Compendium of Knowledge quotation, then Lama Tsogyalpo says two aspects of ignorance. Yeah? So being ignorance with regard to thinking, the law of cause and effect doesn't exist, right? There's one aspect. And there's ignorance, where we just talked about the ignorance of the self of a person. Yeah, so there's two aspects there. But then in the Lamrim Chemo, it doesn't debate further than that. But in other texts, it goes a bit further, because if you have an ignorance that doesn't believe in law of cause and effect, that becomes kind of non-virtue or negative aspect, right? So that can only propel you in lower states of existence, right? But we also have the 12 links in relation with positive karma, right? To be born in as a human state or as a god, yeah? So ignorance, like not knowing or not believing in law of cause and effect, will never propel you, will never can be the cause to propel you in a higher state of rebirth, that ignorance. So that's why there's a debate, and then they say, okay, that ignorance also has to be dealt with. And that's exactly the ignorance we're talking about, right? So the ignorance of grasping at a self. So this grasping at a self is not only a Buddhist thing. Also, I mentioned in the beginning that even in quantum mechanics, they come to similar conclusions, right? That the table or the cup or the flower pots with the flowers or the, yeah, let's take the computer, you know? So all those objects in front of ourselves, they look so concrete, existing out there, all by themselves, right? Isn't it? That's how things appear to us. I can see all the screens, you know, all the people sitting, and I can see some people paying attention. So I can't see everybody, but, you know, so that means that, yeah, if people here in the room, I can see, you know, if people nosing up, doffing up, then I break it with a joke or story, but now it's a bit more difficult. But anyway, so it looks all very concrete out there, right? You're looking at me, you look at the screen, it's kind of very concrete, out there, without dependence. But that's how it appears. But is that really true? You know, that's not the case, because seeing, yeah, meeting here over Zoom depends on so many causes and conditions, as we saw yesterday, right? It can just like that and it doesn't happen, or there's difficulties, you know? So it's not that concrete, you know? So we believe that things appear so concrete. So that's why also we believe there's a self that appears very concrete from its own side, right? But if you look for it, you can actually not find it. Same in quantum mechanics. If they look for the particle, you know, or look for the molecule among all the different particles within the molecule, it's what is more important, they say, is the relationships between subatomic particles than the molecules themselves, you see? So that means it's not only a Buddhist thing, yeah? And also often quote from other sources in philosophy, yeah? So, yeah, there's many other sources who actually come to similar conclusions, that nothing, things appear to exist from their own side, but actually, if you analyze, it's not like that. Yeah. So the same with the self. If you have to get a little bit of feeling of how the self appears before understanding ignorance. Yeah, so that's why we did a little meditation, remember? So that meditation you have to do very, very regularly in order to understand what is this ignorance and how does it appear? And how does it appear in accordance with the different schools of Buddhist philosophy, you know? So that's very important. So it's homework, you know? So that means that you consciously, whenever somebody criticizes you or afflictions come up strongly, or there's fear, like I mentioned when I was on the road going back and forth to Maratika, it's very good experience. Because I thought, okay, the guru sent me there, so nothing will happen. But still, I was quite on the edge of the mountain sometimes, you know, still kind of some fear arose. So amazing. So that still sometimes it's like it was an amazing experience, right? So that means that those experiences in life, when somebody criticizes you, or you come close to death, yeah, don't try it, but you can imagine, right? Falling off a building, or, you know, free air, the parachute doesn't open, you know? Or in a plane and it's going to crash. You know? So if you imagine that and see how the fear arises, you know, that's very important to recognize. How does it appear? And then later on, you have to analyze if it exists the way it appears or not. Yeah, we already saw whatever appears to our mind is not reality. Yeah, but in order to understand this ignorance, yeah, we have to see how does it appear, study the text, then see again how it appears. It is the same. Even as only Dalai Lama, I mentioned the other day also, and Thubten Jinpa wrote an amazing biography of Lama Tsongkhapa. And in the preface, I think, a foreword, also someone has mentioned that based on the texts of Nagarjuna and Lama Tsongkhapa, he had an insight in selflessness, right? And then he related, this was quite a coarse one, he said at that time. So that means you get a little bit of experience, go back to the text, go check with the teacher. That's very, very important. Yeah, of course, only fully realized emptiness, but it gives us a message how to go about. Yeah, so that's why. So Ozone's Dalai Lama also says, whenever he has free time, he studies. You know, though for us, same thing, we studied for, two decades. I never really studied seriously, or just hanging out in the monastery. And because of the kindness of the discipline, I go to teachings and I go to debates and I clap my hands and, but still, that's still, when I have free time here, a lot of free time sometimes, sometimes in translation work, but So then reading, especially this aspect, is very important. Because our mind is so habituated to believing that things are so concrete, existing from the outside, right? So that's why we have a problem when things change, like a virus, or Zoom stops. So that means we see things so concrete, we don't, of people die, that's, we don't believe in. So that means that reality, we're not habituated to it too. So that's with ignorance, since beginner's lifetime, we have habituated with this kind of wrong view of reality. So that means that, we have to do something about it. And to do something about it is not going to happen over a weekend or over a few weeks or a few months or years, decades. That's what the Zonin says, decades. So that's, but then you get somewhere. If you just think, oh, it's too difficult, put it aside. Don't do that. Don't do only the easy things. Sometimes when we read a text, oh, that's easy, interesting, and then we read a lot of that about that, those aspects, right? But things that are more difficult, actually, that needs more attention. So that's why Lama Tsongkhapa in this tradition also is amazing. If you read his commentaries, he produced like 18 volumes of various commentaries. He skips all the easy parts and he comments on the difficult parts. And that helps us generate doubts. That doubt is so important, as I said before. Without doubt, it's very difficult to change the mind. So same with habituations, with addictions. If you think, oh, same with people in the world. They say, oh, I cannot change anyway. That's not really a very clever way of thinking. So to analyze and see there's a possibility of change, extremely important. So and how? And, so with ignorance, same thing. Does it exist or not? Those kind of things we have to examine. And how does it appear? So that's a little bit about ignorance. Anyway, don't worry. We come to that more later on in chapter 18, towards Wednesday and Thursday. So as for the time being, this thing, ignorance, in Tibetan says ma rikpa. Rikpa means to know, right? Ma is a negative. So not knowing, basically. That's how it is translated. So that's why there's many interpretations of this not knowing. So I give you just a few brief explanations. What actually is this ignorance? So for the time being, think it's a mind that apprehends the self to exist inherently, according to Prasangya view, inherently without dependence, right? So the table appears without dependence, but it's not. Our body appears without dependence, not. The computer appears without dependence, but it's not, right? So our body and mind appears very solid. And within that collection of body and mind, there's something that's alive. David Hume, when he was an incredible, intelligent person. David Hume, who is not a Buddhist. I mean, if he met Buddhism or not, there's a lot of debate. But in his 20s, he wrote this book, The Nature of Humankind. And there's one chapter. It's very interesting. Because he says there exactly similar things as we say in Prasangika. He says, it looks like, like a scientist almost, he says, I cannot talk for everybody. But if I look in my mind, there appears to be a self. But if I search for it, I cannot find it. Very interesting comment, So that's kind of I that appears, according to Prasangika, is kind of mixed with aggregates. you know, mixed with body and mind. But if you analyze it, actually, it cannot exist within the parts of the body, right? Or within the parts of the mind, or separate from it. So actually, you cannot find it. You know. Anyway, we come to those reasons later on. So for the time being, this, yeah, if kind of a little bit is an ignorance, is a grasping at a self, yeah, a self that appears to exist from its own side without dependence, right? Yeah. So that's the problem. Because I said the other day, please get angry, everybody. Come on, do it. Then I look at the screens and nobody's getting angry. But if I say, oh, what do you have in your room? I can see that also. Or, oh, how do you look like? You look like this. If I tell you, you look like that, then people say, oh, how dare you say this to me, right? So that means anger arises in relation with this concept of I, right? So same, I always, very striking example as well, you know, if you have your favorite car in the kind of showroom, you know, and you didn't buy one yet, and the boy is throwing stones on all those cars, you think, oh, that's not nice. Then you sign a contract, you know, this, payment or installments of one of those cars. Then the same boy again throws stones on the cars, you know. Then the car is still the same. I mean, it changes momentarily, but for the rest, it's the same. But only your relationship with the car has changed, and it causes you to get extremely angry at the boy this time, you see? So that means anger is related with this concept of I, you know? And attachment, same thing. I need this, you know? I need this iPhone, I need this laptop, I need this computer, I need Zoom to work, you know? So, you see? It's related with the I, you know? So that's why ignorance is the problem. Yeah. So there's a concrete concept of I, yeah? Yeah, so that prepares one in samsaric birth, yeah, number 11. The three compositional factors. Yeah, so here compositional factors is basically dujidan. Yeah, so in asangas, mabukundu, you know, the compendium of knowledge. Also in the branches that the compositional factors here in this context is the same as samjung sempa. You know, it's kind of the mental factor for intention. Yeah, if you study mind and mental factors, it's kind of activity. Yeah, the mental factor that is called karma. Yeah, so it says there are three. Yeah, three. So that refers to three types of karma. Yeah, so that means virtuous, positive, non-virtuous, negative, and neutral or unspecified. Yeah, so virtuous karma, for example, my friend in prison will commit the act of murder, right? Based on, I don't like this person, I don't know actually what happened, but, you know, he generated a kind of aversion to a particular individual based on the concept of, I am more important, how dare this person, you know, putting oneself in front, of course, yeah? And he committed a crime of murder, right? So that means that ignorance causes the affliction, anger to arise, he committed a crime, and that's action, yeah, negative deed, yeah, you see that? And that results in negative results, results in negative effects. Then virtue, using the same example, keep it simple. The policeman in Maharashtra, yeah, who was so tired at the end of the day, but then this lady asked the police officer, please, all the shops are closed, I need a birthday cake, you know. So he organized it, and the family was so happy. It's just a worldly happiness, but still, it's a virtue, right? Yeah, so that means on the kind of course, he had a concept of I, the policeman, right? Based on that, he generated kind of compassion or loving kindness, yeah, and a kind of, not how we define it as such, but similar to that, yeah? Then he did the virtuous act of buying the cake and helping the person, you know? So that's kind of virtue, right? Also based on ignorance, you see? And that's why the first link has two aspects, yeah? Can be a cause or motivation for virtue as well as non-virtue. Yeah. And then the third one, the third of the three, is then neutral or unspecified, neither virtuous or non-virtuous. For example, if I do like this, there's a activity of physical activity, you see? But if I do like that, it's not really kind of, if I just do like that, you know, it's not really motivated, you know? So, do like that, see? It's not motivated, but it's an action, yeah, it's kind of neutral. So that's one division of the three. Other divisions you can find in commentaries is body, speech, and mind. Yeah, so we talked about it. Yeah, we have activities of body, speech, and mind. Yeah, yeah. So that's the three constitutional factors. Yeah, enhance the formation of birds. Yeah. So based on creating karma. Yeah. So we have to think about here. We talk about karma. That is not just any karma. If I do like this, you know, it's not really propelling me in a particular rebirth within the 12 links. Yeah, you need a kind of strong karma. Yeah. Now, so because this all talks about 12 links and it propels you another rebirth. You know, so that means that the karma you engage in should have certain factors. Yeah. So those who study Lamrim, they know there's four factors to make karma complete. Yeah. If you study the 10 non-virtues, for example, then you know there's a basis. Right, there's a kind of intention which is divided in motivation, discrimination, and affliction, yeah? And there's a deed and a final step. Yeah? So all those four factors have to be complete in order to complete this second link of action. Yeah? So throwing karma is a heavy one. You know, it's not just doing like that or say something, hello, how are you? It's positive. Hey, hello, how are you? Yeah. If you motivated well, but it's not that strong that can propel you, right? So you need a strong motivation, you need a strong intention, you need, you know, the fact is to be complete, to make karma complete, right? Yeah. So these actions impel one in the state of migrators. So it means karma, karmic formation. Yeah? So those who listened to the recordings and did the wheel of, you know, the wheel of life, they saw that in the beginning, in the middle, of that wheel of life, there's three animals, right? Yeah. There's the pig, the snake, and the bird. Yeah. So the bird is referring to attachment. The snake is referring to anger. Right. And the pig is referring to ignorance. And if you look well at the drawing, or if the drawing is made well enough, then it should be that the snake and the bird come out of the mouth of the pig. Mm-hmm. So that means that they arise from ignorance by grasping at this concrete concept of I and mine, right? Anger arises or attachment arises. Yeah, yeah. So then in the next circle, I think it was a black and white copy. But is it? Yeah. So then you can see there is a kind of white and a black, half circle white, half circle black. We all hope our life will be like that, half virtue and half non-virtue, but my life is, you know, not half-half, it's like more black than white here, but yeah. So the white is actually virtuous, that means you can see animals go up in samsara, to the highest states of rebirth. You know? In the black cycle, it's negative karma, non-virtue, the animals, they go down, not animals, the beings go down, yeah? So in low state of existence. Yeah. So that means that, yeah, those two things we covered, you know, that based on the ignorance, afflictions arise, right? Based on the farmer, you know, being able to plant, yeah, then we do an action, then the karma arises and the seed can be planted, yeah? Yeah? So that, where is that planted? That's planted in consciousness, yeah? That's referring to verse number 2. Having composition as its condition, right? Meaning, having engaged in an action, that action stops, right? I look at this direction, then I look at that direction. So when I look at that direction, you cannot see what I'm looking at, but there's the Buddha receiving some, you know, milk on the 6 years after 6 years of austerity. So that means if I look at that image, looking at you, that consciousness stops, right? I look there, that consciousness stops. But I can still think about you. Oh, there's this person there, that person there. Yeah. So that means me having seen you on the screen leaves an imprint in the mind, right? A seed. So then when I don't look at you, I can still remember. Yeah? That proves that there's a kind of potential being put in the mind. Yeah? So that's with all our actions. Yeah. If we say something, if we do something positive or negative, yeah, that has a result, a potential to produce a result, you know? Yeah, so that's, so where is that potential being planted in, you know, more or less the stream of consciousness, so to say, yeah? It depends which school of Buddhist philosophy you're going to explain this consciousness or going to mind only the mind basis of all, for example. Yeah. Anyway, that's beyond this course. Yeah. But for the time being, just think it's planted in consciousness. Yeah. And because it's planted in consciousness, there's a potential for it to ripen. Yeah. Remember, on the first day we talked about the Hordern prison in Norway. Remember? Yeah. So that means that people who act negative, disturb society, criminals, so to say, right? If they go to prison and they build up a new habituation pattern, you know, like what happens in that particular prison in Norway, then when they come out of prison, they don't that easily fall back to previous habituations. You see that? Yeah? But they're still there. Yeah, they're not completely lost. Yeah? That's why 20% falls back. You see? So, but has a possibility to change, as we saw with the remaining 80%. If you don't train your mind and you keep the same habituation pattern going, then if it's just a lock up kind of situation, like, you know, in the US, for example, where there's a very high rate of people falling back, like 60 to 70% or maybe to 80%, yeah? If there's just a lock up system, people don't change, the habit continues. And then when they come out of prison, the habit continues again, right? Yeah. So that means that in a similar way, our consciousness has habituations in the mind. When we do something about it, when we progress in a positive way, then those habituations become stronger, stronger, and stronger. It's easier to later on activate that those particular imprints, right? If I look at you for a long time at the screen, then I look inside, I can exactly imagine how you all look like. But if I look this and that, you know, then it doesn't go that well. So the stronger the habituation is, you know, the stronger it can produce a result. So that means the more we engage in developing the mind and constructive emotions, it becomes easier. Of course, the obstacles are there, but it becomes easier and easier and easier. Yeah? That's consciousness. Yeah, that's by the power of habituation. You know, and then at the time of death, you know, when we talk about with that example, right? So the farmer is ignorance, right? The seed, he said, is karma, yeah? And the ground, we put the seed into it, is kind of the consciousness, right? So then it still has to grow. The potential is there, nothing happened, right? So then it has to be activated, yeah? So with the seed is heat, fertilization, moisture, etc., yeah? So for the potential in the mind at the time of death, yeah, is craving and grasping. Strong forms of attachment, strong forms of I want this, I want that, strong forms of habituations or attached to habituations, right? That's true, no? People with addiction, same thing. They stop, the attachment to the habituation is so strong that it takes over again, right? You see? So that means when you stop smoking and stop drinking for some time, then you see somebody else doing it, right? That causes you to think, oh, nice, right? So attachments arises, previous habituations get activated, and before you know it, there's a cigarette in the mouth. You know, so that means that those potentials are not gone, they're present. But over a few months, maybe you are strong enough not to engage in it, right? Then certain conditions are met, this kind of craving. You know, first craving, oh, that's nice. I mean, I only smoked... The longest time I smoked is 2 weeks, so it's easy to stop. You know, we smoke all kind of things in the Netherlands, as you know, but not anymore, though. But at that time, you know, so when we were hitchhiking to Spain, to San Sebastian, you know, northern Spain. So then it was my record, not from time, but money spending on the whole trip. I spent only 5 guildens, which is kind of £2, because we got a lot of food from the drivers, and yeah, it's a very interesting story. But anyway, to cut short, meaning in that trip I was smoking for, we were smoking for 2 weeks, but then we find so dirty inside after, and then we stopped very easy. But you can imagine if the habituation is stronger, then it's more difficult to stop, right? Like my father, for example, smoked for a long time, and then very difficult to stop, and then he stopped. You know, it went very well, and then he saw somebody else smoking, and he said, oh, can I try? And then, before you know it, the craving and grasping becomes become stronger, right? Craving is like, oh, nice, I like this. Grasping is like, I need this, you know? And then the habit comes back, and that's how you can relate to it the same way, you know? The seed you put, they put fertilization, need moisture, and it grows. Right? Yeah, so you see that? That's how our mind functions. Yeah, so that's true with positive things, and it's true with negative things. Yeah, so we have an action, that action stops. There's an in-between period, and then we meet certain conditions that can, you know, bring those previous habituations come about again, if we again fall in the fault of, you know, like to do it. Yeah, and that's also true for positive things, right? We practice patience, for example. Yeah, and then the more you do it, the more you get convinced about the benefits. Yeah, so the next time a person gets is annoying you whatsoever, then you just remember this strong kind of contemplations you have done before, and then it helps you not to fall in the same fault, you see? Yeah, by these kind of imprints of understanding, I shouldn't do this. Yeah, so then you get, oh, this is the right way to deal with my mind. Yeah, and then the more you think about that, the stronger it becomes. And then when you meet a situation that maybe previously caused you to get angry, then this time is kind of, oh, I'm not going to making the same mistake anymore. You see that? Yeah? So that's how we go from habituations, of an habituation pattern, of an activity that stops. Yeah? There's an in-between period, and then it can come back again. You see that? Yeah. So that's important to know. Yeah. So it means first is ignorance. Based on ignorance, we have kind of an affliction that comes up, right? Then we have a kind of a deed. Yeah? That deed stops, leaves a potential in the mind. At a time of death, it propels or has the potential to propel you if you activate it, right? So that's, you activate with craving and grasping, yeah? So that's kind of how you see the cycle slowly starting to turn, yeah? the cycle of samsara. So then consciousness propels in a future lifetime, yeah? So from Buddhist point of view, we accept the law of reincarnation, yeah? So I don't know if everybody on the other side of the screen, 77 today, and also a few, but if you believe in reincarnation or not, that's your own kind of research. It either exists or doesn't exist, right? So if you think, oh yeah, it exists, but then also you have to know why it exists, right? So you have to analyze. That's very important. I said doubt. When we were in the monastery, sometimes, you know, you sitting in a class, and the teacher doesn't have a text on the table, not like me with all my notes, nothing on the table, you know? And then he teaches, but actually the teacher gives us more doubts than answers. That's an interesting system, you know? More doubt than answers. So that gives us the opportunity to do research, to check if it's true or not. You know, so that's why if you listen to me and say, oh, this monk, Namdak, oh, he studied for 20 years, he should know, you know. or you read a book and you say, oh, this incredible scholar, it's all true. And don't do that like that, you know. Analyze if it's true or not. So there's also reincarnation, true, because 12 Links talks about propelling a future state of existence. If you believe it or not, you have to analyze. Why is it the case? Yeah? So same for me, when we studied Pramanavartika, the second chapter. So the second chapter deals with how we are reborn in samsara. How consciousness goes from this to the next life. Yeah, there's a logic of consciousness can only be produced by consciousness itself. Yeah, like the seed of an apple can never produce a pear. Right? Yeah, so in similar way, consciousness can only be produced by consciousness itself. Yeah, so we also say that consciousness is not matter, it's not physical. Something else. So that makes it in the scientific world a little bit difficult. So that's why some scientists they like to not talk about the field of neuroscience but the field of neurophenomenology, meaning everything that has to do with neuroscience and can be examined, what is a correlation, because the brain we can examine, right, and also the influences with brain activity we can examine, but what consciousness is all about is still a question mark. Yeah, So that means that we have to examine that. Either consciousness goes to the next life or not. Right? We have to examine. So to examine that, in Buddhist philosophy, I said we have logic. We say consciousness can only be produced by consciousness itself. So this moment of consciousness is preceded by a previous moment, that previous moment is preceded by a previous moment, that by it previous moment, there's a stream of consciousness, right? Yeah. So that means we cannot find a beginning, because also moment A is produced by a previous moment, right? So that previous moment by a previous, and there's no beginning. Yeah, so that's the logic. So we were debating that quite a bit, and there's a lot of other reasonings, that's just one. Yeah. There's many other reasons, but anyway, to keep it short. So that's one reasoning. But as Onizo said, we also need to think about evidence, right? So that's there's a lot of evidence, you know. If you put statistics, I studied a little bit of statistics in my studies of hydrology. If you put statistics with regard to Stevenson's research of children remembering previous lifetimes, including birthmarks of the cause of death, you know, it cannot just be coincidence. You know, there's like more than 2,000 cases over 40 years being studied, documented, photographs of the cause of death of the previous personality, habituation of the previous personality as well as the present, knowing the previous fathers and mothers and family members, describing, you know, areas. And on top of that, a birthmark of the cause of death of the previous personality. Statistically, it's very strong. You know? So that's, if you're interested, you can read some books by Stevenson or one of his students, Jim Tucker, you know, if possible. So that's very interesting from the point of view of evidence of, you know, people who remember. Yes, mostly children between, you know, until they can speak, until 5 or 6, 7 years, sometimes they start forgetting. You know, so there's many interesting cases. And also cases, if you study the cases, yeah, those books are a bit more rare to get, but how habituation patterns of a previous personality carries on in the present. Very interesting, especially for us Buddhists, you know. Very interesting. Yeah. So that's one thing to think about. Another thing to think about, the main thing to think about is, what is consciousness, right? And consciousness, as I said, is not matter, it's not physical. And it's only produced by consciousness itself within the continuity of a particular person. Yeah. So consciousness is not matter, but there's a lot of things, research being done between mind-brain relationships, mind-brain problem. Is consciousness, there's a very interesting presentation by Grayson, Professor Grayson from the US, who his presentation, also the title was like, I think, is the brain really necessary, or something like that. Very interesting presentation. Yeah, maybe strong, but yeah. So means we have to see if there's possibility of consciousness to exist without brain activity. You see? That's very striking. So that's mainly, a lot of things can be seen in the field of near-death experience, NDE, for example. So there's a lot of research being done by medical doctors, a lot of research being done by cardiologists, you know. We initially didn't believe this phenomena of near-death experience, but they saw it happening in the hospitals and then documented it and researched it. You know? In the Netherlands, there's a person called Pim van Lommen, very interesting presentations. In the US, a British professor, actually, from the University of New York, yeah, Sam Prania. Yeah, so very interesting, very scientific presentations about there is consciousness at the time of when a person has cardiac arrest, right? Clinically, the person is dead for a very short period of time. Then the person returns to life and then can tell stories about what happened in that in-between period. And those stories can be validated, right? So if you talk with a materialistic neuroscientist, he says, yeah, 10 to 20 seconds, oxygen flow to the brain stops with cardiac arrest, and people see all kinds of things. Right? That is the kind of standard answer you get from most neuroscientists. But the more open-minded neuroscientists, who are open to things we don't know yet, yeah, we have to actually research more, they say, oh, interesting. That you can see, even Pim van Lommen mentions a few statistics, and also Sam Prania mentions a few ones. Yeah, and then you can see that it depends on the research, but it's like varies between like 60 to 90% of what people actually experience and talk about is valid. Very interesting. So that means that clinically, the person is dead, there's no brain activity, but there is consciousness. And that consciousness perceives something that can be validated. Yeah? If the person doesn't come back to life, we cannot validate it anymore. But if the person comes back to life, we can validate it, right? Very interesting. Yeah. So anyway, that's you can check. There's many other aspects. So that's consciousness. Yeah. That moves from this life to the next life. Yeah. So what I said, you have ignorance. Based on that ignorance, there is kind of an activity. Yeah. Based on that activity, either positive or negative, yeah, that activity stops, leaves potential within the continuity of consciousness. Yeah. And then by the power of conditions like craving and grasping, it becomes active again, and at the time of death, it can even propel you in a future state of existence. Yeah. So as long as you get that picture a little bit clear, then we can fill it in a little bit more. Yeah. Yeah. So consciousness enters in verse 2, it's still verse 2, second line. Consciousness enters transmigration. Yeah. Then once consciousness has entered transmigration, yeah, name and form come into being. Meaning, if you enter in the next life, yeah, then it's called name and form. So name and form is nothing else than the five aggregates, right? We have a body and a mind, right? So the body is the form and the name are the remaining four aspects of the mind. Yeah? So we have feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness, right? So they fall in the classification of name. Yeah? They're named like that, name and form. Yeah. So that's number four, right? So we have ignorance being the first link, right? In the first verse, yeah, first line, you see ignorance. The last line in the first verse, you say actions, yeah, that's the second link. Then the second line in the second verse is consciousness, right? Is the third link. And then name and form is the fourth one. Yeah? So name and form is number four. Yeah? Meaning a being comes into existence and, you know, has consciousness. So that means consciousness doesn't come at the time of birth. No, it comes at the time of conception. When the male and female organs meet, and you know, there's conception of the fertilization of the egg cell. Yeah, so at that time the sperm and ovum comes together, and there's a possibility of consciousness to enter. Yeah, at that time, basically, we talk about these aspects of birth. Yeah, it happened at that time. Yeah, so. The consciousness dives into the future womb of the mother. Yeah. Yeah, so that's name and form. Then number three, yeah, it says once name and form come into being, then, you know, the fetus starts to develop, right? The new to be born starts to develop. So the sense, six sense sources or six sense organs, you can say, yeah, they start to develop. Right. Yeah. So then, in science, we have a very clear picture how actually the newborn is developing. Right. So in the Abhidhamma literature, it talks about different stages, very similar. But in the West, we have much more much more kind of evidence of how it actually develops. We can actually visualize better or see better. Yeah. So these six sources, you know, they are developed, completely developed if they're no faults. Yeah. No impairments, then at the time of birth, they completely developed, right? Yeah. At the time of birth, then the child, the newborn, comes out of the womb, right? And then we have the six sources, or the six sense, six sources. So why six? So we have five sense consciousnesses, right? And one mental. Yeah, we have the five senses, you know, the eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, and the detachable, the body. Right? So it's five sense consciousnesses. Yeah? And we have one mental consciousness. Yeah? So that means they completely developed all those five, especially those five senses, at the time of birth. So then our life starts to, you know, not rock and roll, but a little newborn is not really rocking and rolling yet, but, you know, it goes to start his or her life, right? So having this body, with those senses, then what happens? You know, we come into contact with objects. You know, we see things, we hear things, we, you know, taste things, smell things, you know, we touch things, we can feel things, you see? So then, based on those types of contacts, then mind's mental consciousness arises, or nice or not nice. You see? Yeah. So then the feeling comes. Yeah. So that's number 7 in the line. Yeah. Feeling comes after contact. Yeah? So that feeling can be positive, or pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Yeah? So then, being a sentient being, we wish happiness and don't like suffering, right? So that means if there's a feeling of pleasure, we like that. If there's a feeling of suffering, we don't like that, right? Every sentient being has the same nature, wanting happiness, not wanting suffering. And when, when there's a pleasant feeling, oh, nice. When there's an unpleasant feeling, not nice. Pleasant feeling, oh, I want to have this. Unpleasant feeling, oh, I want to separate from this. You see? Yeah. So, pleasant feeling, you want to be with it. What does attachment do? Wants to be with its object. Right? Yeah. So then, unpleasant feeling, don't like this. So what does anger do? Not want to be with its object. You see? So then you can see that based on this contact, there's a feeling. And based on that feeling, there's an affliction coming up. And then the mind takes over. Oh, nice, I need this, I need that. Or I don't like this, I don't like that, I have to do something. You know? So you can see it all has to do with the same process here. So that means if you're capable of, when there's a feeling, of being more neutral and just experience what happens, instead of taking action of saying nice or not nice, I like this, I need that. No, just appear to see what appears. You know, there's also training, then you can prevent a lot of suffering, right? Instead of straight away taking action. So we human beings, we have the capacity to think. You know? So on the introduction I said, those people who are not emotional intelligent, then they act straight away, like a criminal. They're not in control. They have this emotional hijack and they cannot control it. Yeah, so the clue is to control it. You know? So then you can prevent a lot of harm. Yeah, so that comes in this. Yeah, there's contact with an object. There's a feeling with it. At that time, we can still do something. Yeah, when the emotion becomes stronger and stronger, then it can become too late. You know? So that's a possibility to act as well. Yeah, so there's a lot of techniques how to act at that time. Yeah, so to just if you do a lot of kind of the meditation we did and we do again, the breathing meditation, right? It calms down the mind, right? If your mind is calmer, you can see so much more, you know? The same as a still lake, you know? You can see. So it means if the mind is calm, and if you on a daily basis remember or recall that calmness, it's much easier to stay in control. You know? That's kind of emotional intelligence. If the mind is always disturbed and you just follow and you don't care, you know, then it's very difficult. You know? So that, like, you know, the example between the lake in the Alps and the North Sea, when it's wind force 8 or 9, right? So there's a difference. You know? Stillness or disturbance. Yeah. So that means that there's a lot of training that can be done. Yeah. With breathing exercise, you know, as we do with counting of the breath, yes, we did. You bring the mind down and you can see so much more. And then you start to see other people kind of, you be more aware of what's going on. Yeah. So that you can learn a lot. And that's very important because then you be aware of what's going inside your mind. Right? If you don't know what's going inside your mind, then forget ours. You cannot really know what happens with others, right? So if you're more aware of what's going on inside your mind, then you see the first trigger of anger, or attachment, or jealousy, or pride, and you can take action. When it takes over, then it's too late. Then better go for a walk, or, you know, do something physically, or, you know, jogging, or, you know, whatever. Do some exercise, you know, to break that kind of strong affliction, or destructive emotion. Yeah, it's too late. But if you do more this kind of concentration meditation, it makes the mind more calm. And then you see, be more aware. You see, oh, look at that. There's anger coming in the corner. And it becomes stronger and stronger. Then you can still act, right? Yeah? So then you can apply the antidote of anger versus patience, right? You can apply. Yeah, if you just act like, you know, don't say humans are like animals, but if you see the monkeys in Dharamsala, I was talking with Vemalaksa over the phone yesterday, and because I know people in Tushita a little bit. So, and you are staying in a place where I used to stay, and then I know the monkeys, and they do like whatever comes to mind, you know? Like, people who know monkeys, they know that. Street dogs sometimes in India, you see the same thing. In the UK, especially now, all the, you know, the dogs, they have an owner and they don't walk around freely, right? So they're disciplined, you know? But in India, you have a lot of street dogs, so stray dogs, you know? Yeah, I see one Indian on the screen. Yeah, sorry, I think it was a good example of the... In India, I learned so much in India, so much. Seeing those, you know, stray dogs, you can see they act straight away. If there's another dog coming in their territory, acts with anger, barking and biting, you know. Or when there's female dogs, you know, they go behind it. You know? Yeah, it's interesting to see. You know? So that means if we are in control of the mind, we prevent so much trouble. You know. So that's why, especially in this, we see here, there's a contact. We cannot avoid contact with people, right? Even in the lockdown, we cannot avoid, you know. But we can play with how we react to people, right? So that's what Shantideva said, you know, you cannot change the whole, when the whole world is filled with thorns, you can do two things, right? You can change, you can fill the whole world in leather that you don't hurt your feet, or you can put leather around your feet. What's easier? I mean, what's easier from the point of view of the physical thing of putting leather, but from the point of view of mental training, it's not that easy, but possible, right? So that means that if you train your mind, then wherever you go, well, it doesn't matter. Like if you see His Holiness, you know, so many difficulties. Tibet, you know, in the community, many issues. But His Holiness never loses His peace of mind. In complete control. Yeah. So that means when Paul Ekman, for example, world-leading behavior scientist when it comes to facial expressions, you know, he saw 10,000 of faces, then even more. And then when he saw His Holiness, he said, I never seen a face like that before. You see? So that means everything we think or emotions that come up, we can see in the face, right? We can see, no? People, if you talk about something difficult in life, the whole face changes. And it stays for an average person for a few minutes, you know? And then Paul Ekman says, when you look at His Holiness, it's not even for a few seconds. It's just like so spontaneous. That means there's no craving and grasping at issues, you know? So that's very interesting. Though there's contact, you know, there's feeling. But it doesn't take the next kind of steps of these kind of strong afflictions, you see? So it's possible to stay in the world, you know, stay in society, meet people, deal with issues, but be completely in control. Not, you cannot control the whole world, but your own mind, right? So that's a very important aspect, yeah. Yeah, so that's depending on the six sense sources, contact comes into being, yeah? So then another aspect to know is that the five senses basically don't really produce happiness. There's no satisfaction with the senses. Because if whatever is, you know, is whatever is done with the sense consciousnesses brings ultimate happiness, then the more you do it, the more happiness should bring. But it's not the case. With addiction, drinking, smoking, going to parties, you know, I had a lot of experience of those things before I became Buddhist. But it's not really, in the Netherlands, there was a pop group called Doemar, I always quote that. It's a very good one. It says, is this alles? Is dit alles? Means, is this everything? It's kind of, there's no satisfaction, you know? So that means whatever is the object of the senses, the more you engage in it, it's not that you become happier and happier and happier, right? The more you go to parties, the more you eat your favorite meal, the more you do addictions, it's not you become happier, happier and happier. The mind gets more and more and more disturbed, you know? So that means that the doors of the senses, basically, it's called the doors of the sufferings. Not that whatever sense consciousness is there is causing suffering, but it's a door, it's an opening, to suffering. That means if you don't use, you know, proper kind of training, then it can cause a lot of problems. So that's why it's called, the sense is often called the doors, you know, of the suffering. Yeah? Because, yeah, it doesn't bring lasting happiness. Whatever is there for the senses, it doesn't bring any lasting happiness. Yeah? So that's why the six sense sources. And then mental consciousness, if you train your mental consciousness in a particular way, there can be everlasting suffering or everlasting happiness. You know, if you train your mind, mental consciousness, you know, when you do meditation, concentration meditation, we cut later on, you know, if you develop, then you can cut sense consciousness, right? So that's why achieving the bliss of samadhi is so incredible for many people, not only Buddhists, but also non-Buddhists, that at that time, there's no sense consciousness manifest, right? That means there's only the bliss of mental consciousness. That bliss of mental consciousness gives so much satisfaction that the people don't even care anymore about food or drink, you know, or the things of the senses. Same for us, same for many people who enter spiritual path, they see, you know, the parties they went through was not that kind of full satisfaction as opposed to, you know, do some meditation and see if you meet some of the meditators. I just met the story in Maratika, right? I went to Maratika, which is in eastern Nepal. There's a few caves of Guru Pema Sambhava. Amazing caves that you can see imprints in the rocks, you know. Not just imprints, it's not just man-made, handmade by human beings. It's very special. Many things you can see in the rocks. It's a very special place. Anyway, so then we went to another place called the Naga Cave, which is a very small cave. You have to go body length-wise inside. It's a bit scary. And then there was a person there, you never know. Certain of those pilgrimage sites, you meet people, you think, oh, they may be not that normal or ordinary. So there was this 80-something-year-old man, very special. So he took us in the cave, and he said, oh, just body-wise, like, and he was more than 80, right? So he just went down. So then he said, come, and he offered us some tea in his room. You know? And then, I mean, if you haven't traveled before in Nepal and India, you would not really like to drink his tea, but because he was cleaning the cups with a cloth, which was not very clean. But I saw his room. Nothing there. It's like a few containers, one for rice, one for oil, you know, one for dal, and for the rest, nothing there. You know? And the cups were just like, you know, very simple kind of thing. Nothing in the room. But this man was so full of satisfaction. I mean, he did all kind of practices because I saw behind the curtain a few things, so I knew he was a great practitioner, but you could see so much satisfaction of the mind, you know, not of possessions. Very interesting. It's also lockdown, I mentioned once before, people are locked down and locked up and they cannot do that and they have to go out and that. But if you put things into practice, Kuchchudra Rinpoche, for example, he spent 19 years in lockdown, you know, so in a room in Tibet, in Lhasa, in the city, you know, using the mind, you see, so that's, yeah, sometimes inspiring, it's good to hear those stories, you know, yeah. Yeah, so yeah, first four, I'm planning to do first four as well. Yeah. So that means that if you train your mind well, especially mental consciousness, there's much more everlasting happiness, you see? Yeah. So that's a good thing to know, yeah, for the six sense forces being the doors of the suffering. Yeah. So then you go to verse number four. Arising is only dependent upon eye, form, attention, and thus depending on name and form, consciousness is produced. So here, this is one example, right? We have five senses, yeah? So the eye is one of the five, yeah? So that is kind of, technically speaking, we say is the kind of empowering condition, the eye power, yeah? Something, the own common empowering condition, the eye sense power. So like the optic nerve, for example, yeah? So that's kind of, dagyen, we say, is kind of the empowering condition. Yeah, without that optic nerve, the eye cannot really function, right? Then there's form, it says eye, form. Form is the object that is to be seen, right? Yeah. Then it says attention, those who like to study a bit more. Attention here, the translation is maybe not the correct one. I would prefer recollection, Yeah, in Tibetan it reads Tenjeba. Yeah, so recollection. Recollection of what means the directly preceding condition, the I consciousness. Yeah, so we have three things, right, for an object. There's an object, there's a consciousness, and there's a sense power, right? So we have an object, let's see the color and the shape of this table. You can see the table? Cup. The color and shape of the cup, you know? That's an object of my eye consciousness. And my eye consciousness needs to use the eyeball and the optic nerve, etc., etc., to function, right? So there's three things, right? There's an object, there's a physical sense power, yeah? And there's a consciousness. Yeah? So the consciousness comes into being from a previous moment of consciousness, right? Yeah. So that's what referring towards here. So all the senses, they have in a similar way, they have a sense power, they have an object, and from the point of view of consciousness, they have a directly preceding condition, that particular consciousness, right? Yeah, so that's referring to these three aspects with eye, form, and attention. Yeah, yeah, consciousness is produced. So because if there's no object, if I close my eyes, there's no object of the eye consciousness, right? So then there's no perception of form. Yeah? So that means there should be eye consciousness, there should be functioning eye, and there should be an object. Right? So that's all true. That's how we come into contact. That's how we come into contact with objects. That's how we generate a feeling with objects. And by that feeling, as we just discussed, all kind of mental fabrications or afflictions can arise. Right? So that's how that works. Yeah. Yeah, so that's maybe for today. And then we do short meditation and question answer. Yeah. So meditation, I was thinking we do the same as yesterday. Meaning, not yesterday, I think. Well, did you do yesterday, I have to ask? Did you do your homework yesterday? I asked you to do homework. Did you do homework yesterday? The free day? Yeah, okay. Yeah, it seems some people do like that. Some people, they don't do anything, so I yeah, so, yeah, it's important to do these things again and again. Though sometimes it's like, oh, the same thing again, and simple, and the same thing again, but until we have achieved the realizations, we have to do it again and again, right? Yeah, so first we do the concentration meditation, yeah, same thing as day before yesterday. We take the object, the breathing. Yeah, so the breathing helps us to relax. You know, if we're too uptight, then we cannot think properly. True, no, isn't it? Like if you're stressed, you know, or an affliction comes up, you cannot, the mind is not clear. You know? I still have those things. I wish I would share one story, one more story, or not. I was in Bodh Gaya, in the most holy place in India, and I was planning to do a retreat and also take care of a small one, a 12-year-old one, and yeah, he's kind of an orphan. And so then I asked Venerable Lekso to you know, take back to Sarah, and I came a little bit later. So then they left in early morning, you know. One person knows the story, I can see. So so I left in early morning, you know, like what is it, 4:30 or 5-ish, I think. Yeah, 5-ish. So they left, okay, bye, and bye. And then they left, and then I went back to my room and relax and sit, and, you know, and then it came to my mind, something is wrong. Came to my mind, but I didn't know what was wrong. So then, oh. And then actually I said, oh, sh-. I never said that word, not very often, but I said, oh, sh-, you know. And then he forgot his ID card. And without an ID card on the plane, you cannot board a plane, right? And he's 12 years old, and you cannot let him alone stay in the airport. And his airport was in Varanasi, it's a little bit further away from Bodh Gaya. So then they had a train from Bodh Gaya to Varanasi. And I thought, oh, sh-, you know. And I just had the card, his ID card, and just the guy on the bed like that. And I just didn't think, you know, I didn't think. And I said, no, no, relax. So then I did a few breathings, you know, and I thought, I called Lexo, you know, where are you? When is the train going? Okay, how long does it take? It takes about, if you have a good car, it takes about like, you know, more than half an hour. And it was 5:20 and the train was going 6:07, you know. So I thought, pray to the guru and do it, you know. So I was running and hoped to find a rickshaw first. So I got one of these electric rickshaws, out to the stand, and then they have this motorcycle rickshaws, and this guy said, I have to go there and the rail station in Gaia. He said, yeah, okay, give me 2 minutes. I said, oh no. And then he had to do his window first. Now I told him in Hindi, and I said, come on, quick. Then he had to put petrol or diesel at that time, diesel, and it was 5:35. And the petrol station was just outside of Bogai. I thought, the train will be late. That's my, I'm a bit optimistic. Oh, the train will be delayed. And this guy went so fast. I couldn't believe. And I was on platform 602. Just 5 minutes before the train is supposed to leave. So you can see, initially there's kind of stress. But then a little bit of breathing, and then you can do things, right? So, anyway, personal experience. So that's why we do the breathing, So, you breathe in and out to the nose, right, as natural way, and then you count the breath from 1 to 10, as we did the other day, and then make sure the mind doesn't get distracted. Yeah, that's the. It's not just relaxation. Yeah, so breathing is being used as a help. Yeah, but it's not the goal of meditation. Not to relax, right? The goal of meditation is to change the mind. Yeah, the Tibetan word for meditation is gom, which means to habituate yourself in a positive way. Yeah, so that's what we try to do. So that means that you count every in-breath as 1, out-breath as 2, and then you count from 1 to 10 and start over with counting. Yeah. And then as soon as a thought comes up, mostly about the past or the future, yeah, you try not to think about it. Not only try, you just don't think about it. Yeah. You just let it go, like the clouds in the sky. So, in that way, you only thing you should be doing is to count the breath. Yeah, so, let's give it a try again. So as soon as the thought comes up, don't pay attention. The only thing is the counting of the breath. Yeah, so let's try that for a minute or two. Yeah, so just the counting of the breath. Yeah, from 1 to 10, and then start over counting. So then when the mind is settled down a bit, then we try to do analytical meditation. Yeah? So analyze the things we talked about. And in particular, maybe try to analyze in recalling what we did the day before yesterday. There's first is a concrete concept of I am I that arises. Yeah? Based on that, there's an affliction, either attachment or jealousy or pride or aversion or anger, right? And that leaves an imprint in the mind. Or potential, or you act and it stops and it leaves potential in the mind. Yeah? Or you can take an addiction or whatever you feel comfortable with, and then try to see that after some time, when you don't meet the conditions for that affliction to arise, there's nothing happening. But as soon as that condition is met, yeah, when we meet or come in contact with that object again, then those previous habituations, they get activated. You know? By the power of the affliction at the time of meeting its object. Yeah, so try to see there's a kind of, ignorance producing an affliction, and there's a kind of action, either mental, physical, or verbal. Then there's an in-between period when you don't meet that object. Then you meet that object again, and then it comes back, you see? So how you react at that time again by, activating that previous inclination, how that works, try to check. In relation, it's very simplified meditation, how craving and grasping actually activates previous formed or created karma. Yeah, so try to contemplate that for about, let's say, 2-3 minutes. Yeah, so try to analyze it for yourself. And then try to come to a conclusion, try to see that a previous kind of habituation pattern, you know, maybe not present for a certain period of time, but can be activated again in the future. You know? And then you fall into the same kind of pattern again, you know. So try to see that's really the continuity of these kind of ripening or activating these kind of potentials in our mind. Yeah? So try to see and try to come to a conclusion that actually is a process and our mental continuum. Yeah, so try to come to that conclusion and then focus on that conclusion for about a minute. Alright, then we can stop. So, we do quite short meditations because we only have a certain amount of time together. But if you see this really as a retreat, then if you have time, then you can do a session before breakfast, you know, then two between breakfast and lunch, and two, you know, in the afternoon, and one in the evening. And then you can take one verse, you know, for one session or something, you know, do some praise in the beginning. You know, do some contemplation on the breath, yeah? Do the calculation of the breath, generate concentration, then do the analytical meditation, analyzing if it's true or not and why it's true or not. That's the way to move forward, you know? That's the way to actually train the mind. Just absorbing the knowledge by itself is not enough. That's why I said in the monastic institutions we debate much more than we receive teachings, you know? We receive maybe 2 or 3 classes a week. And every day we spend hours and hours and hours on the debate courtyard, you know. So that's, yeah, this is a tradition. And it's true, you know. If you really analyze well with a little bit of teachings, but you put it into practice, then things happen, you know. So that's a matter of time. Yeah, so then you can structure your day if you want to in this particular way. Yeah. Yeah, and then the prayers, you can do prayers, you know, what we did, or a lot, make it a bit longer. You know, with Sakyamuni Buddha or another deity, or you feel comfortable with, or you feel inspired by, you know, you can make it as suitable as possible for your personality to move forward, right? Yeah, you can use these different techniques. And then in the breaks, you read about it, right? Don't read something completely different, you know, because if you read something in the break in relation with your meditation, then it's kind of what we say, the wisdom from hearing, contemplation, and meditation. Right, there's 3 types of wisdom, extremely important. You know? First, we gather the information. Yeah, there's the wisdom from hearing or studying. You know, it's very important to get the information. Yeah, first. Then you analyze. You know, what we do in analytical meditation. Yeah, contemplation. So the wisdom that comes from contemplation. Then you reach a conclusion and you focus on that conclusion, and that's the wisdom that comes from meditation. You know, so that's very important because many people, when they just start with Buddhism, then It's like, oh, interesting, nice, 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 you know. But after some time, then it's just the imprints, because you have imprints from previous lifetimes, right? So it has been activated, everything is fine. But after some time, if it has not been stabilized with new meditations, then it can fade away again, you know. So same with afflictions, you know. If you're just into Buddhism and everything is fine and nice and the afflictions are not that strong, I have a lot of experience with that. And then after a few years, they come back. So that means that, you know, we have to make it stabler and stabler by contemplating again and again and again and meditate until the realization is so strong, you know, that it's immovable. You know, that is what we call uncontrived, that is spontaneous. You know, so that, yeah, that takes quite some time. Yeah. Oh, look at that. I feel so amazing, kind of technology again with Zoom. But this kind of a different document. So the questions, they just pop up, you know. So there's three questions on the, yeah. So I read them first, is it?
Yes. First of all, thank you, Geshe-la.
Okay.
The teachings you've given so far, thank you. Could I encourage people, if you have practical questions, to write them in chat, and then we could ask Geshe-la. As you said, there are three questions that have been posed.
True.
But great if you have practical questions. But yes, there's three there. Perhaps we focus on the third one, Geshe-la. The more I reflect on karma, the less I understand how it's possible for us to have free will.
Please,
can you speak about the mechanics of free will in our mental consciousness?
Yeah, this question always comes up. Free will. Yeah. When I was, yeah. I almost died once in a conversation on free will, but an accident with somebody in the car you were discussing, and then anyway we survived. But so free will, of course, that's free will. You know, it's not karma. First of all, karma is not fixed. Many people think karma is fixed. Yeah. So I often use an example of astrology. You know. A friend of mine, he was very wealthy and he made a lot of money because he was very intelligent, but he used astrology to plan his meetings and his deals, you know. So he knew exactly when the dollar was going down or up, or and not exactly, but, you know, he was quite clever with astrology, you know. All his meetings he planned according to that, so he made a lot of money. So I thought, because I'm a bit kind of skeptical with these things, so I asked him, okay, show me, you know. So actually, very interesting to see, the first moment, the first time I met the Buddha Dharma in 1993, he pinpointed it down with 1 hour accuracy. I was quite impressed. He was just 1 hour off. He said 9 o'clock, well, it was, I think, you know, 7:38 or something, when I got a bit kind of, you know, inspired. So that means, that's very interesting. I said, okay, maybe coincidence, show me something else. Then he showed me the first time I became a monk, also very important, right, in my life. So I thought, oh, it's like a clock, you know. So I thought, okay, what about the future? Well, it was past. Then he said, for practitioners, very difficult. For certain normal people, ordinary people, it's easier to predict. Very interesting comment, you know. So that means that to a certain extent, you know, you have a range between you can move, right? Right, so that means if you practice a Dharma, then there's purification, accumulation of merits, new imprints, new thoughts, new habituation patterns. If you train your mind, it becomes much more flexible. If you don't train your mind, you fall in the same habits. Same as the Hordaan prison in Norway versus a prison in the US with lockup system. People fall back in old habits or not in old habits. You see, it's very similar. You know, so karma is not that fixed. And why is karma not fixed? Because it's in nature of impermanence. It depends on causes and conditions, right? Yeah. So that's one thing to be known, because it's not that we have to experience certain things, or there's no free will in that regard. You know? So that's one thing to be known. Then the free will, also very interesting, is also a will or idea or motivation or attention or wish to go in a particular direction, right? So that wish to go in a particular direction also is not fixed. though it depends on previous inclinations, you know, on previous habituations, you see. So that means that it's just a matter of law of causality, because there is no I that is in control or something, or self that is in control. It's just a matter of causes and conditions, right? So with those causes and conditions, you can play. Yeah, but if you don't train your mind, so to say, then it will be easier to fall in the same habits, and it will be easier to fall in the same patterns, right? But if you train your mind, you can move in different directions. Yeah, is that a little bit free will kind of idea or not? I mean, there's a lot of things to be said also from science. I mean, this scientific research is very Buddhist, but it's not, you know, there's other interpretations possible as well. But there's, I mentioned Jeffrey Schwartz, you know. So one of his friends, Henry Stepp is in the quantum mechanics. It's not, you know, this theory can also be explained in different other ways, but it's an interesting way of thought, you know, when I read it. So that means that they actually prove there's a free will with science. You know, they say one aspect of neuroscience or activity in the brain is the release of neurotransmitters, right? So a person who has OCD has a release of neurotransmitters. Oh, I have to wash my hands, right? And cannot escape doing that act. No free will, so to say, at that time. No training, no mind training. That's exactly what happens, what the brain tells the person. Yeah. But, they say, because in quantum mechanics, we talk about the observer influences the object, right? So in this research, Henry Stepps has a theory. This ray of releasing of neurotransmitters can be explained in many ways. But anyway, so one aspect of the release of neurotransmitters is calcium ions, right? Calcium ions within calcium canals or calcium kind of vessels. You know? So then we talk about level of subatomic particles. So for a neurotransmitter to be released, it depends on that more subtler aspect of our brain, right? Which is on the quantum level. So that on the quantum level depends on that's the object, right? That aspect of the brain, it depends on the subject. So the person thinks in a particular way, it produces more thoughts of, I'm not going to listen to wash my hands, I go to the garden instead. The more thoughts being produced of going to the garden instead, the more neurotransmitters will be released of going to the garden. Very interesting, you see? Anyway, that's from the point of view of science, one theory. I mean, it's not that strong, that theory, but it's a very interesting way of thinking. And using mind training to change, because Jeffrey Schwartz uses the same technique as we use in concentration meditation, right? If you use these mental factors of alertness and mindfulness in concentration meditation, and you say, oh, I'm not going to listen to those thoughts, let them go. The only thing I'm doing is counting of the breath. The more you train your mind in this aspect, the more you come in control, right? I'm not going to listen to this thought. I'm going to do that. You see? So that's a free will. And that's the matter of fact of training. So the more training you get, the more free will there is. Is that okay? Yeah? I mean, this is one way of thinking. It also depends how you define free will, but yeah, then we hear for another hour or something like that, but this may be one interpretation. Yeah? That's the last question, right? You mark it there, and I can see here. It's amazing. So then, next.
Are you okay to have more questions, Geshe-la, given the time?
Yeah, if people are okay, I'm okay.
Okay. So then there's one about, would it be of benefit for next precious human rebirth to learn Tibetan in this lifetime?
To learn Tibetan? Or Sanskrit? I would benefit for next previous human. I mean, the main thing, to be honest, if you want to... of course, some imprints is good, you know, always, but... the main thing is, you know, the main thing is to train the mind, right? And there's so much translated already. So if you really want to get realizations, then you can do that, you know? Just meaning that depends. You have to check, you know, with teachers. And I, same thing. When I was 23, I met Buddhism in Madrid in student 93, I said, you know. So then I was so kind of short-sighted, I thought, oh, everything in English, and do a retreat, and that's it, no Tibetan. But then my teachers were so kind to say, Namdak, no, no. You study Tibet, you go there, you study, and then you go there, you study more, you know. So luckily, thanks to them, you know, I was very fortunate. But you have to see, you know, what's the possibility, because if you want to learn Tibetan, you have to go for it. Meaning you have to dedicate at least 1 or 2 years full time, you know, to get, you know, to really get it. I mean, not really get it, but to get the start of the colloquium, you know. And then only you have to study the texts, right? So to study the text also takes time, because every text has an uncommon vocabulary, you know. So it's a huge investment, so you have to see what's possible in your life. That's one thing. But on the other side, to do it on the side a little bit, like terms in the Lamrim, you know, to study them in Tibetan, it puts imprints in the mind, right? So, because when we study a text in Tibetan, there's always the first line is a title in Sanskrit, right? So then, it's been explained in the commentaries, this title has been given in Sanskrit, one explanation is because it refers to the origin. Another reason to have Sanskrit is to put imprints in the mind, you know? So that's, if you just study a little bit Tibetan, if you can do it full time, as I just said, but a little bit next to your other Lamrim studies, then you slowly learn a few terms. It puts imprints in the mind, and it carries blessing, right? Because the meaning of one Tibetan term can never be condensed in one term in the Romanian languages. You know, so that means there's a kind of, it's true for Sanskrit as well. You know, but yeah, you have to see what's possible. Yeah, check.
The question was, how can we discern the difference between challenges we are meant to overcome and learn from conditions that can be considered harmful to Dharma?
Yeah.
Geshe-la, your mic is started to be crackly again.
Okay, sorry.
I don't know, I'm sure it's not anything you're doing. It was really clear during your teaching. Yeah.
Maybe Zoom.
Beginning and now it's gone crackly, and we haven't changed anything, I don't know what we do, but just to mention.
We also didn't change. No. I mean, we change every moment, but
yeah.
Maybe
but
Zoom.
Just so everybody's aware that we haven't changed anything, and it's all the mics are off, and it's still crackly. So.
Maybe Zoom got tired.
Yeah, I think so.
Yesterday you took a day off also, you know. So yeah, so back to the questions. There's two things there. Harmful to the Dharma, in the sense, yeah, it's not that there's something out there which is the Dharma, right? So harmful to oneself is a better way to think about it. So challenges we have to learn from, there's a very common view, you know. People say, oh, I have this karma, I have to experience this because I have to learn from this. Yeah, so karma I have to experience because I have to learn from it. Since beginner's lifetime, this is a very Buddhist answer, right? I hope that's okay. It's okay, Buddhist answer. So since beginner's lifetime, we have got all these difficulties and we never really learned from it. So now it's really time to put it into practice and to do something, right? So it's not that, oh, I have to experience this because I have to learn from it. Then learn from it. You know, then you have to put it into practice. Make sure it doesn't happen in the future. Because suffering we experience is unwanted, right? So then when we experience it, we have to put it into practice. One aspect, yeah? But if you just think, oh, I have to experience this because I have to learn from it, but you have to put it into practice, right? And harmful to the Dharma, I mean, the Dharma, the real teachings of the Dharma, there's two, right? It's the kind of the two aspects of the teachings. One is the scriptures, or the transmissions of the scriptures, so to say. Yeah? And one is the realizations, right? So those two aspects of the Dharma, where are they? In the minds of beings, right? Yeah, so whatever harms you or not, you have to check. Yeah, if you look at, you know, things that enhance afflictions, then there's something to be avoided and to put into practice, right? So, yeah, so regard for harmful to Dharma means harmful to your own progress on the spiritual path, right? That's the real thing to think about, I think. Yeah. Yeah. Okay? You muted.
Thank you very much. Yeah. That's the last of the questions that we've had.
Okay. So, yeah. If there's a burning question, we can do one more, otherwise.
Well, Jill had a question. If you could just repeat the run through of a suggested retreat day schedule.
Ah, yeah, okay. So, suggested day. So, you get up in the morning, you check. If it's getting up too early in the morning and you get sleepy all day, no benefit, right? So one of the meditators in Dharamsala, that was in the 80s, I never met, unfortunately, His Holiness sent him to the West because he had got the realizations, not only of the Lamrim, but also of the Vajrayana, yeah? Of the inner fire, etc. So this meditator, very interesting, he was so skillful. He said, I always make sure I sleep enough. As soon as Dalai Lama says the same thing, right? So don't push, first of all, they do retreat. Don't go to extreme of sleeping too long, because also, but it's better in general to go to bed early, wake up early, right? Yeah, you should sleep, in that way. Then you wake up, you know, it's 4 or 5 or 6 or whatever, what is your best time, you know? Then wash yourself, you know, or your face, and then you sit. And then you do prayers. Before your prayers, you do motivation. Yeah? Then you do prayers. So you can do the prayers to the Buddha, as we did. And Heart Sutra, something like that, or whatever prayers you're comfortable with. But try to do, especially in relation with Lamrim, try to do at least one Lamrim overview prayer, like the foundation of all good qualities. Right. So then after that is finished, then, as we did the day before yesterday, today we forgot because of the Zoom experience, but if you do it correctly, then you visualize Sakyamuni Buddha in front of oneself, right? Then before you do the meditation as we did today, we can maybe give it a try tomorrow, then from his heart comes first white nectar light to the crown of your head, fills your whole body. With this white nectar light, you think all negative karma gets purified, right? And all obstacles for meditation gets eliminated. And in particular, the obstacle of the object of meditation of that session. For example, you're going to meditate on ignorance, right? So you think all negative karma gets, by receiving this white light from the heart of Sakyamuni Buddha, the crown of your head, you think all negative karma gets be washed away, right? As well as all obstacles get be pacified. In particular, the obstacle to understand ignorance, right? Yeah, so you do that. Then next, make again request to the Buddha. Then yellow golden nectar light comes from his heart, crown of your head, fills your whole body. Then you think, by receiving this, may I be blessed to get realizations of the whole path to enlightenment, and in particular, the understanding of ignorance. Right? Yeah, so that's two aspects of purification and getting the right conditions. Yeah, so you can do. And then, of course, if you have a teacher, you see the Buddha as one with your teacher, there's a lot of things to be said, but that maybe you can do another time. So then you did it. Then you sit and do the breathing, you know, first to calm down the mind. Yeah, because if the mind is too distracted, it's very difficult to meditate. So we do this breathing exercise or breathing meditation as we did, and tomorrow I will do the 9 round. Then you get familiar to that as well. So you do the counting of the breaths. There's the concentration meditation. That generates two mental factors, alertness and mindfulness. We will introduce tomorrow. Yeah. So today I touched it a little bit with how to deal with having free will, having those two mental factors. You know, not to follow a thought, but only thing you're doing is the counting of the breath. Right? So that you do for, you know, a minute or two. Just keep your sessions short in the beginning, no? Don't push and get distracted and sit for hours, but there's no quality. Quality is extremely important. You know? So then, you do the analytical meditation. Okay, what is ignorance? How does the eye appear? Think about when there's fear or when somebody scolded you or you got criticized or afflictions arose. You analyze, how does it appear? You know? Then after that appearance, how do I react? And there's anger or attachment. Just take a daily example, right? But the clue with analytical meditation is to look at the event as an observer, not engaging, right? You have to see from a distance, okay, I got angry at this person, I reacted like this, okay. Don't get involved. Just observe what happened, right? And that's true for Lamrim meditation. Certain meditations is slightly different when you meditate, you are in a lower state of rebirth, for example. Yeah, but with the afflictions, you meditate like that. So you analyze with reasons. The more reasons we have, the stronger the analytic meditation. Yeah, said in the monastic institutions, we get 2 or 3 classes a week and hours a day of debate. Yeah, so that's analytical meditation. Yeah, so very important. So then you analyze analytical meditation, you do for a few minutes. Yeah, then you can break a little bit. You can just sit, have something to drink, and then you can do the same thing over. You know, or you break completely and do another session. Yeah, so depending on your inclination of different prayers, you can add a few more. And then later down the line, you know, you do purification practices, accumulation of merit. Because our mind is so dull, I mean, my mind is very dull. So it means that we need a lot of purification, accumulation of merit. Like in the time of the Buddha, it was like, you know, maybe 50-50. 50% study and meditation, 50% accumulation of merit purification. These degenerated times, according to certain masters of the lineage, like Lama Dapa Rinpoche, for example, always give the example, is 25% meditation and study and 75% accumulation of merit and purification. Same in the monastic institutions in Tibet, same thing. There's more accumulation of merit purification than actually study. You know, it's very important. Because without, we have so much done, so much negative karma, we don't purify it, it's very easy to fall in wrong views. And because that's what happens, you know. When afflictions are strong, we believe in them. We say, yeah, that's true. You know? So that means those habit ways are so strong, we have to have a little bit of stronger force than just only the contemplation. So that's why there's prostrations that can be done, Vajrasattva that can be done, there can be all kind of purification practices. And then accumulation of merit. If you have huge stores of accumulation of merit and purified negative deeds, it's not that difficult. You know, that's what the meditators say. But if you don't have done the preliminary practices and only study, then it's not that easy. You know? So that's why Lama Dapa Rinpoche mentioned 75% merit and purification, 25% study and meditation. But yeah, same thing in the tradition. Yeah. So that's you have to can enhance your own practices like that. You know. So then you do that. That's why in the Lama Rim it's always been advised to do Georgia, right? Preliminary practices. You know. That's why, for that reason. You know. Or you do Lama Chöpa, you know, those kind of practices. Very important. Because if the mind, you know, has a purification, has the accumulation of merit, there's a connection with the teacher, blessing is there, things go easy. You know, so that's, that's very important. So for those who are more serious, I mean, long-term Buddhists and like to engage more, then that's very important. Yeah. So you do that before breakfast, then you have breakfast, then after breakfast you read a little bit, you know, about the subject you're meditating upon. Then you do another session or 2 more sessions. And then, but also your sessions, you make formal, but sometimes you have to be skillful. You know? If the session doesn't move in a particular direction, then you break. If it goes well, then you stay a bit longer, but you stop the session just when it goes right. When it still goes right, you stop. You know, so that means next time you want to do it again. You know, it's a technique of, do it again and again and again. Yeah. So, you do 1 or 2 and then you do another 1 or 2 in the afternoon and then in the evening you do 1. Right? So you can do, you know, either 4 a day or 6 or 8 or depends how long you make the sessions. And you can be quite, and try to read, you know, after lunch, for example. Don't start straight away after lunch because you will fall asleep, right? So, and sometimes you have to be skillful. If your mind is a little bit kind of sleepy, make a coffee. No, that's what I do. Drink coffee, not too strong, because then the mind starts to scatter in the other extreme. Yeah. So you make a schedule for yourself and be nice to yourself. Like I said, don't squeeze yourself. If you enjoy your retreat, you want to do it again, right? And if you enjoy, do things with enjoyment, there's so much pleasure and it's so easy to think about things. If you're too tight, then the mind gets tight and then it doesn't go. You know, so that's a very, that's how you can make a schedule throughout the day with some prayers that you have to slowly fill in, right? It's just a standard kind of explanation. Yeah, normally we do 7-limb prayer, for example, in the beginning, right? But that you have to, check. Is that a bit of an outline or not?
Thank you, Geshe. Yeah. I found that very clear, yes. Yeah. And thank you very much for answering all our questions.
Okay.
If anybody has further questions, maybe they could write them in the Google Doc, and we can ask those tomorrow. Thank you so much,
Vishnu. Okay, then we should, yeah, maybe just short dedication because somebody over time, yeah?
Do you want to, the prayers or not?
No, I just tell you what to do, what to do, and then you just think about those things, yeah. Some people know the prayers, yeah. So first of all, try to, there's three important dedications to be made, generally speaking, according to Lama Scop tradition. Spreading of the Buddha Dharma, long and healthy life of precious gurus, and the holy wish to be fulfilled, and for full attainment of enlightenment for self and all sentient beings, yeah. Three very important ones. So first, spreading of the Buddha Dharma in all directions and these kind of teachings may spread everywhere that ever being come in contact with it, to be able to practice it and categorization state of part of enlightenment. Yeah. And also try to think about the long and healthy life of our precious teachers, like as well as Dalai Lama, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, and all the teachers, teaching the true path to enlightenment. Yeah, without them, we lost, we stuck. So may they have long and healthy lives, and may all the holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. Kare rave korve singam so penda deva male jongin chere zigvan tenzin gyazo vishabe siten badu ten. Then all sentient beings without exception, may quickly generate and develop the minds, yeah, and eliminating suffering and going towards the, you know, perfect peace of liberation and enlightenment, and by the power of the correct motivation and the realization of emptiness, yeah, so the three principal aspects of the part, so to say, you can think. First, renunciation, yeah. Emptiness. Toni tawa rinpoche magye panangye gyochi gyeba nyamba meba yangone konde dawa. And then, yeah, for full alignment complete, so say that oneself, all sentient beings are don't exist from their own sides and are in the nature of interdependence, and that's why we have free will, and that's why we dedicate also towards the direction of full enlightenment as quickly as possible and ever be part of this teaching, quickly progress on the path to enlightenment. Okay, thank you very much. See you tomorrow. And pray for Zoom to be there. I forgot to dedicate for Zoom. Dedicate for Zoom. Bye.